This is K.W. Jeter speaking. I'm going to read the opening chapter of my new novel, Noir. The title is spelled N-O-I-R. It's being published November 98 by Bantam Spectra. A couple of preliminary comments. I don't mean to be immodest, but just a technical note. A lot of my novels are to some degree patterned after Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, inasmuch as order gradually emerges from chaos, and that which at first seems mysterious may not be made less mysterious, but might be at least slightly illumined by the end of the book. So if you're completely confused by what follows, you're doing fine. Also, please remember that, certain internet ideologues aside, copyright is freedom. It's your freedom to enjoy the work of writers, musicians, and artists, while respecting the freedom of those writers, musicians, and artists to continue producing that work. And now, the opening chapter of my novel, Noir. At that moment, as the blue spark of sex burned a wire through his tongue, the heavens rained fire. At that moment, all the other moments rushed inside his head. He turned from the kiss that filled his mouth, the hot copper taste of coated flesh, and fell against the glass. The window shivered with fear and mirrored his own ghost face back at him. He knew what was happening outside the window, that the fear was his alone as much as the ghost and the kiss were, that the transit authorities had sent another drone aloft over whatever city lapped around this building like a hectic gray ocean, that the no-flies had found the idiot projectile in their airspace. All air was theirs, and were busily devouring it, scarfed shards falling on the streets below, and the face of anyone stupid enough to look up. Mere coincidence, apocalyptic phenomena, synced up with the battery salt leaking through his teeth. This must be how women feel, thought Trevelt. Not real women, but the women of ideal and dream. Men's dreams, their dream of women's dreams. He had felt himself go all weak at the knees, a kinesthetic cliche as much as the racing heart under his breastbone, when the soul kiss had started to eat him up. He had put his tongue in the other's mouth, as though his lips were the aggressors, the conquerors. He had made the connection inside another's flesh, that point where electrode and neuron were one fated synapse, and had been conquered in turn, battered and ravaged. That dream of rape, in which the raped are dreaming still, in which the dreaming turn their faces upward and see their own faces above them, spread out on a luminous sky like the disintegrating airplanes above the ring of cities and the uncaring, dreaming ocean, where every hot bit of metal struck and hissed into steam, sharp as his own intake of breath, drifting into unlit depths and turning into adornment for dolphin skeletons. Calm down, Trevelt told himself. You're burning up. The window sweated against his cheek. Did the other sweat as well? His vision had blurred, everything that close out of focus, and he couldn't tell if the other's face was as wet and shining as his own felt. The kiss hadn't ended. His tongue was still there, locked in bandwidth rapture. The room around him had defocused. The city beyond the window threatened to go any second. Not that it mattered, not now. No now, all then. Memory and spasm. What had happened, what had been brought back to him. What he tasted in the mercury pool of the other's tongue. His own tongue lodged in the hinge of the other's throat, diving toward the other's heart, as though the secret that drove the sweat through his pores could be read there among the obscure saline atoms. His legs had turned to gelatin, trembling with desires, satiated and yet hungry. The other had to hold him up, its hands locked in his armpits, pinning him against the glass, the crumbs of the eaten drone sizzling transmuted gold on the other side, an inch from his liquefying spine. His tongue in its mouth, their kiss, his senses and being penetrated by the inrush that left him limp and sweetly crucified. Invisible stigmata blossomed in his palms and groin, the feedback of flesh distant in time and space. The flesh that the other had touched, grasped, and squeezed blood and lubricating mucus from, like overripe fruit, trickling to the points of his elbows. He felt that now, the other's gift to him, rape of him. Slow down. Trevelt murmured the subvocal command and plea. Locked so tight in the other's embrace, its reflected image in the glass next to his, that he could feel the sympathetic flutter of its larynx, as though his words had strummed the other's vocal cords like taut guitar strings, a chord of surrender and supplication. It obeyed him, or seemed to. He knew the other's response was as synchronous and acausal as the heated shrapnel falling outside. But the inrush slowed torrent to stream and separated into layers of incident and event, became an inventory of all that the other had gone out to seek and had brought back to him. He had smelled it on the other's skin-like skin, that muscled substance that passed for its flesh. When it had returned and let itself into his cube apt, its key embedded in its stained fingertips, he had smelled it then, as it had walked through one room after another and into this one with the high luxury window overlooking the anonymous city below. The mingled overlays of sweat and semen, stale cigarette smoke, and endorphins breaking down to burning dysfunctional molecules, the shards of the other's flight through a sunless sky, collagen derivatives, pharmaceuticals that tasted like metal and the perspiring of schizophrenics, virginal lipstick and Chernobyl mother's milk, original sin in its photocopies, a wind from that other atmosphere, 10 degrees lower than his own body temperature, had swept ahead of the other as it had strode toward him. He had turned from the window where he had stood waiting, turned upon the sense and smell of its arrival. No sound, it walked so softly, silent as that other world, and had seen the smear of blood on its brow, Cain-marked and Lilith-born, the great wisdom of indulgence in its idiot's eyes, which had scanned and judged him like the lenses of the watching security cameras at every corner of every building. First from across the room, as he had felt the first tremors of fear move out from his gut, then inches away, then less than that, as it had stood right in front of him. The other's eyes had been round, dark mirrors in which he had seen himself, perhaps more clearly than ever before. That was then, just a few minutes ago, or perhaps only seconds. In any death, even the smallest, there was no east or west or other measurement of time, no gauge of stars or the Earth's rotation. In this now, the inrush had slowed and become subject to inventory. He could sort one thing out from the next, what the other had brought back to him. The Christmas morning of the genitals, each bright ribbon bow coming loose inside his head. This is what he received from the other's kiss, what he saw, felt, inhaled in acidic, mingled pheromones. A vision of black ink tattoos that slowly woke and shifted beneath a woman's skin, pale as unsunned cavefish, white as Bible pages, dimly phosphorescent. The swarming of those tattoos, like decorative koi or human eye piranha, attracted by the shadow of a man's hand over the world in which they swam. Their nuzzling beneath the palm laid on the woman's skin, their kisses delineated teeth, the tingle of each electric microsurge, the release of musky and capsuled opiates, the blood warmth of a close enough approximation of real human flesh. All of these and more, the pumped-up techly stuff and the straight old-fashioned, the red-headed idiot in the cave of wonder, the soft, wet hand of normal coitus, normal as it gets. Thought Trevelt, I'll have to work on this. Now he knew why people started doing this sort of thing, what the attraction was. Metal fingertips, disconnected from anything but rising tendrils of scarf smoke, clicked against the window and fell, pieces of the no-eaten drone. The larger pieces of engine manifold and wing panels would plummet next, fiery meteors sweeping the streets clean of any watchers. He was falling as well, the connection between his tongue and the other's mouth broken, that blue spark snuffed by his pink-tinged saliva. His jaws felt hot and vacant as the other, working off some consumer protection coating, lowered him gently to the fleece carpet. Shame, or something like it, turned his face away from the other's gaze above. He couldn't bear to be seen, even by something empty and soulless as the autonomic truck that came every morning to change the building's air hoses. Especially by something as empty as that, as empty as the other standing over him. Judged by machines, by their hard, flat scrutiny, the iris of an onrushing train. Iris and inrush. The two words remained inside his head, like prophylactic debris washed up, pearlescent and luminous on a moonlit beach. Maybe that was how women felt as well. He didn't know. No way he would. He put his arm up across his face, as though shielding himself from the sun. The name of the flower had left its image, an intricately petaled construction, in his memory. Maybe one of the tattoos that the other had brought back to show him. He could almost see it opening in the white field of the woman's skin, opening the way flesh opened, the dew at the petal's edge, a perfect magnifying lens. I'm making that part up. That part didn't happen, thought Trevelt. Or maybe it had. He didn't know. The other watched him, waited for him, for whatever he might choose to do next. The other was in that part of its operative cycle. It had gone and fetched, it had brought back, and now it waited. With the flat, empty gaze of coins, of metal that had been on fire and then extinguished, smoldering to cold lead. He might stand back up on his trembling, bone-loosened legs, stand up and kiss the other again, insert part of himself into the other again, let the blue spark snap and sing piercingly high into his throat and down along his spine, penetrated by the other and what it had brought him. The iris, the eye and the flower, each opening, flesh opening, the mouths of the tattooed koi nibbling at the other's palm, the warmth of the dead white flesh and skin, the ocean in which they swam. It was all there, waiting for him, watching him. I'll get better at this. The first time for anything was the hardest. He turned on his side, drawing his knees up against his chest, closing his eyes so he wouldn't have to see anything but what the other had brought home and bestowed upon him. On his tear-wet cheek, he felt fire, heat through the window's glass. The last of the drone plane fell from the sky and rolled its black smoke, an insect swarm of sparks, along the building's flank. I'm going to read part of a later chapter in Noir, in which another character named McNeil, M-C-N-I-H-I-L, is traveling through the wastelands south of Los Angeles, of what Los Angeles has become. He's traveling on a train to go and have a conversation with his dead wife. And on the train, while he's traveling, he's approached by a professional child. "Tell me a story," said the professional child. The man sitting by himself, in fact the only other person on the train, looked up. It seemed to take a little while for him to focus on her, as though there were something wrong with his eyes. "All right," said the man after a moment. "How about a Bible story?" "That'd be fine." The professional child flounced the ruffly skirt of her party dress over her bare red chapped knees. She dangled her shiny black Mary Janes above the train's littered floor as she sat in the seat next to him. whatever you like. The man looked lonely and a little sad. He needs, the professional child thought, what I have. Go ahead, she said. This is the story he told her. And it came to pass, he said, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of California, and they dwelt there. And they called it the land of oranges, because that fruit was of plentitude there, and free for the plucking and eating. You're making this up, said the professional child. The man shook his head. It's all true. And so plenteous was the golden fruit, and so dizzying the golden sunshine, that the people said, why shouldst not all things be as free as these, especially to us who are so deserving? Why shouldst we pay for that which we want? You're right. The professional child scowled darkly. She had been stiffed a couple of times in her career. People always say that. So the people of the land of oranges sent out to the peoples of all the other lands and said unto them, give us that which we want, and put it on our tab. They said, give us, and you shall have our sacred promise that we will pay for all these things. You can trust us. Yes, sure, said the professional child. And soon, continued the man on the train, the people of the land of oranges had parks and large houses with garages of many doors, and they had boat harbors and multi-lane freeways and fiber optic cables routed through the earth so that they might converse with each other and order more things from online catalogs. And they built walls around their houses and gates with 24-hour manned security so that they might not have to see anyone other than themselves. And they did look at each other and smirked and said, are we not exceedingly fine in our eyes and God's eyes? Then what happened? And then the people of the other lands came to the people of the land of oranges, and they didst have the bill in their hands for all the parks and the fine big houses and the boat harbors and the boats therein. And the people of the other lands didst say, this is how much you owe, and this is when you said you would pay up. And the people of the land of oranges didst quake behind their gated walls and grew angry, not because they could not pay, but because they did not want to pay. The man slowly shook his head, play-acting a storyteller's weary disgust. And the people of the land of oranges said to the people of the other lands, we will not pay. Why shouldst we? We are too fine and noble and too connecting wonderful to have to pay a bill like that. You can take your bill and shove it. The professional child's brow creased. Bastards. And the people of the other lands, who had paid for all the parks and houses and boat harbors, very calmly said, all right, have it your way, but there will be consequences. And the people of the land of oranges looked at each other and smirked some more and said, what consequences can we possibly suffer? For is not our God a God of greed, and are we not his children? He'll look out for us. And they didst wipe their butts with their bonds of their sacred promises. Yes, said the professional child, I think I know the people you're talking about. The man waited a moment before continuing in a lower, spookier voice. But the skies didst darken over the land of oranges, and the earth grew sour and died, sending forth only dead things. And the tides ceased to roll in the harbors, and the waste from the sewers mired the boats amidst the dead and rotting fish. And the gates rusted and froze in the walls around the fine houses, sealing in the people of the land of oranges, which was no great loss, for by then they had become dead things, living, sort of, in a dead place. And the people of the other lands did say to one another, that's how it goes. They brought it on themselves. When you don't pay, you can't play. And the people of the other lands had dead of their own amongst them, and they did say, now we have some place to send them. And so they did. The man fell silent, eyes closed, head tilted back. Is that it? Raising one eyelid, the man glanced over at the professional child, then nodded. Well, she said, it's not a great story. And I don't think it's really from the Bible, is it? The man shrugged. Depends upon whose Bible you're talking about. But it must mean something important to you, huh? Or otherwise you wouldn't have told it to me. That's true, at least. So? The professional child smoothed her frilly skirt above her knees and waited. The man didn't need any more prompting than that. He shifted in the seat, reaching into the back pocket of his trousers for his wallet.